So on the show, we like talking music. We like talking concerts. Who's coming? Who should come? I would think fairly soon we'll get the official confirmation on Timberlake, right? For the Super Bowl, you had the hot and heavy rumors about 2 weeks ago.
That still hasn't been confirmed?
No, not
really.
Not from the NFL, right? And so seems later than normal. Maybe we can go to the Google and check on other times. So you had the item during the 12 o'clock news that Kenny Chesney's coming back. Many people really enjoy Kenny Chesney in concert. He's had a number of good shows, popular shows, which have sold out quickly, well-received at Target Field. And now he's coming back next year, and he's going to U.S. Bank Stadium. And in all sincerity, if I'm a Kenny Chesney fan, Adam and Lindsay, I'm ticked. I mean, I'm glad he's coming. But so far, how many big shows have we had? We had five? Because we had the first three, the first year U.S. Bank was open, and then we had U2 and we had
Guns N' Roses,
right? So are we at
Coldplay.
Coldplay, that's right. So we're up to six. And at best, the reviews have been mixed on sound quality.
Right.
That's the kindest.
Yeah.
And it really does depend upon where you're sitting in that building, because we talked about a bunch the Monday after U2. We were there sitting in different locations. We had great feedback from people who were there. And some were like, it's okay, it's fine. Others, it was horrendous. Did you see when it was?
So two very different ones. For Lady Gaga, she announced at the end of September.
Okay.
For Coldplay, they didn't announce till December 3rd.
The NFL didn't announce it
until,
wow.
It wasn't official until December 3rd.
That surprised me. So Chesney, what's the date? He might say,
it is
May 5th. Is that what I saw? Okay. He might say, listen, I'd love to go back to Target Field. They can't accommodate me.
Yeah.
Right. This is when I'm in town. This is when I can do it. Okay. This is when my tour takes me in the general part.
Early May.
And maybe the Twins said due to turf conditions.
Right.
Maybe it's just due to their schedule. So here's my choice. You can either see me or not. But if I'm a Chesney fan, understanding the accommodations, because I'm assuming that is a part of this, it disappoints me because I think the concert sound at Target Field after attending, I don't know, maybe five shows or so, I don't think it's close between U.S. Bank Stadium. Do you think it's close at all?
No, I've seen two shows at Target Field, I think.
Yep.
And, yeah, it isn't close.
Do we think if logistically it's the same, and it's not always, right, how often will the singer, the band, those folks involved put the emphasis on, we got to go with some sound quality here versus it's just money?
I think whichever
place offers us more dough, we're just going there.
If you've reached that level where you're playing that size venues, I don't think you care.
And I love Kenny Chesney, and I don't think that I'm not trying to say that he would do something to kind of pull the wool over the eyes of his fans or, you know, put on a show in a stadium he wasn't happy with, but he can sell tickets anywhere. I mean, he sold out two nights at Target Field in a row.
Mm-hmm.
I think they just, whoever decides, just looks at it and goes, we're in.
Should Kenny Chesney or other artists care more about the sound quality? Do we think they do care at all, Lindsay?
I think some of them do. I think there's still a certain percentage of the whole idea of like an artist who probably gets on stage, hears it. You know, like I would say someone similar to Adele who's very opinionated.
But she's not going to play a stadium that size.
You don't think?
Mm-mm. Not right now. I don't. I think she could.
Yeah.
But I just don't think she's going to.
See, with Kenny, I hate to say this, but I don't know if his music would sound bad in there because it's not, I mean.
But Luke, it's still the speakers. It's still the acoustics.
Yeah.
Right? I mean.
Yeah.
Why would he sound any different than you two?
What you're saying, though, I think people who go to Kenny Chesney aren't.
You're singing along.
You're not looking for looking for the album version of all those songs.
Yeah.
And he's
not looking for, you know.
He's dancing and talking. I mean, it's, you're there because of who's on stage and less of. Yeah, it is. I was at the show at Target Field. It's a party.
But don't you think U2 is a party?
Yes, but.
They're just better? Is that what we're saying?
It's a totally different scenario. I mean, U2 and Kenny Chesney, if you're going to put them up against one another, U2 is someone that you go and you're like, you go for Kenny Chesney. He could replace everyone in the band the night before, and if they can play the songs, no one knows any different.
Yeah. And so the quality of the sound just doesn't matter nearly as much. And again, I'm sure the logistics, as we said, may be playing a big part. May 5th, twin schedule, that time of year, weather.
Plus, you know what you're getting.
Like, maybe he's not available when we get to June and July.
Because, my experience at Guns N' Roses was a lot better than my experience at U2. Because Guns N' Roses, I mean, it's the party. It's, you know, like, whoa, are they going to play, you know, Patience differently than they usually do? It's.
And I had it
wasn't bad.
See, I had multiple friends who went there and they were crushed. They were that mad. But I really think with U.S. Bank right now, it depends so much on where you're sitting in that place. Because I told you, for us on the stage,
I was sitting almost the same spot.
Really?
And my difference was they had the huge screens. You could see, you know, them singing along. So, I mean, and it was.
Yeah, you were very upset about these screens.
Well, especially the first part.
Well, and then when they kept showing ants. When they kept showing those sports injuries, too. I mean, just out of nowhere. I don't know what
that was. Put the death on the screen. You know what I want. Jeez.
9 past 1. Here he is. Let's get to a few political items. Every day, there's two or three new ones that stand out. So let's get to the one involving the mother of a soldier who was killed in Niger. This is going back to, there was a lot of silence on this one. And the president was asked about it at a press conference. And to his credit, I'll repeat this again. And it's maybe to his detriment, as we were talking about the other day. But he answers significantly more questions from the press than Barack Obama. It's not close. And George W. Bush. Now, what he says causes my head to spin because a lot of times it's counter to what he said before. It's factually counter. But as far as making himself available, he does that. So he's asked about it. And then we get into just flat out and out lie without any doubt. When he's talking about what he's done with families compared to Barack Obama and other presidents. And it was remarkably insulting. It was showing not a shred of integrity to brag about your own brilliance and to use the death of our soldiers to do it. It was disgusting. So then we get to the phone call itself. The mother of a soldier killed in an ambush said today, because we've had this story going on now for going back to last night, that the president did disrespect her son with remarks in a condolence telephone call. Sergeant LaDavid T. Johnson's mother, Kawanda Jones Johnson, told the Washington Post that she was present when the White House called Tuesday. Reached out to the widow. The mother was there. This all came about when a representative, Frederica Wilson, said that Trump told Johnson's widow that her husband must have known what he signed up for. Going back to what the mom said, the president did disrespect my son and my daughter and also me and my husband. The president has continued to deny this. He said through a tweet that he had proof. Then he briefly met the media. I don't know if he was meeting with the cabinet. I didn't see process maybe. Adam and Lindsay, you know where, he said, absolutely, you'll see the proof and why he definitively did not say it. The representatives of the Johnson family was astonished by Trump's remarks during the phone call. Wilson told multiple media outlets that the widow was so shaken by the exchange, she was crying the whole time. And when she hung up the phone, she looked at me and said, he didn't even remember his name. That's the hurting part. The representative also said that, in her view, the president must have a brain disorder. that needs to be checked out to say these comments. So what do you think? It's another one of these moments. Is there any way in this one, Adam and Lindsay, it could be just a different interpretation of something he said, that he's calling, he's extending his condolences and says something like, everybody knows this is something that potentially could happen, but again, I'm very sorry for your loss. Isn't that possible?
Yes, absolutely, and I'm not one to defend the president, but I think that's absolutely, especially if you're someone who already has a negative view of this man.
Yep.
And every word that comes out of his mouth is going to be scrutinized. That being said, if this is a case of he said, she said, we just talked about it yesterday, about the continued lies that come out of the president's mouth. So he doesn't have a lot of credibility in that respect.
I agree with you 1,000%. He doesn't show a lot of empathy. It doesn't come natural to him. And all of us have our certain faults. It's pretty tough when you're the commander-in-chief and that empathy doesn't come out. And he demonstrates it with just repugnant comments about Puerto Rico, and let's go down the list. But I really think in this case it is very plausible that it was maybe some awkward wording, right? I just can't imagine there was intent to that callousness. Now, proof is you have a recording of the phone call, Lindsay, right? That's it. You then feel like, because the president has showed himself to be incredibly thin-skinned, you say, okay, because I'm the commander-in-chief, because I'm the president, here's our recording system, because let's not forget, he once made up that complete scenario, right, with James Comey. Remember that nonsense that, on what could be recorded, and you better hope not, and then that proved out to be erroneous, just like that the Obama White House had tapped, Trump Tower, that complete lie. We can go on and on, but here we go. Show us the evidence, and then we move on. Then we know exactly what was and wasn't said.
Well, this is what I think is going to happen. I think he has made it clear to most people this idea of whatever. He has proof. What I think is going to happen is it's going to continue down this line because now it's he said, she said. The representative who was with her is speaking out.
Yep.
The soldier's parents are speaking out. He's now going to say, well, no, I'm not going to put her through that. I'm going to be the bigger person, and I'm not going to release the tapes so that, one, there will be no proof, and two, he looks like the martyr for helping her, saving her from the embarrassment that she made this all up. Do I think that this could be the case of, not mistaken identity, but poor wording, badly phrased sentences, bad tone of voice?
Yep.
Absolutely. Would I be shocked if it wasn't? No. And the thing that
he's created that.
Yeah. The issue that I see here is instead of going after this woman, a normal human being would go back and say, I'm really sorry that you took what I said in a poor way. I've been told many times, specifically by my mother, I use poor tone sometimes.
I am very guilty of that too often. That is a fault of mine.
And I have to go back many times and say, I'm so sorry. I did not mean it to come across that way.
Yep.
This happens at our house every night. I'll answer a question and all of a sudden I'm in a terrible mood. And I'm like, no, I'm not in a terrible mood. I just have a terrible tone of voice.
Yep.
A normal human being would go back and understand the pain that this family is in and say, I'm so sorry.
Think about that. Lindsay makes such a good point, Adam. Think about the position these folks are in right now. The husband and son was just killed in an area where that's the first time they've had any combat in that way in a very, very long time. They are remarkably sensitive. They are overwhelmed by this. Who can blame them? And instead of just trying to move on, just trying to ease, just trying to step away from it, he always wants to jump back in to the battle because that's always how he has been in all aspects of his life.
Yeah, and you can say all you want about the bigger person would, you know, reach out again, and but he's incapable of doing that.
No. Somebody says, you cannot believe Trump would be that callous. Really? Have you paid any attention to the guy? We talk about him every day. We do. And I've criticized him when it has been available to me quite often. Do I think he would go out of his way to criticize the widow of a soldier in the first phone call? No, I don't. Do I think he could be so careless, so sloppy, and so without empathy that he could come off in a careless way? I do. I also think there are ways, and if anybody thinks I'm a consistent defender of Donald Trump, you just don't listen. I also think there are ways that sometimes if you predispose to have disdain for a person, and Trump has created a lot of reasons for many people to view that way, that you can be more aware of that even before. But when you go into a phone call like this, and when you're just telling people how brilliant you are because you call everybody and nobody else does it, and by the way, you're now calling these people the day after it was raised at the press conference. Let's not forget that. No phone calls before, but now it's been raised, and interesting on the timing. And then, according to the family, you botch it this way. That's rather unique, I'd say. I'll just read this first graph from a story this past weekend out of the New York Times about the number of states in the country concerned about elections and hacking tied to what this is separate from what hasn't been proven. Let's be clear about that, because there has been no proof that votes were altered in any of the states. But there's also no doubt, outside of seemingly the occupant of the first of 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, that Russia was attempting to play an enormous role in the election and attempted to alter votes but was not successful. So you get to this first graph, state election officials worried about the integrity of their voting systems are pressing to make them more secure ahead of next year's midterm elections. Lindsay reached out to an excellent guest, Christopher Famagetti. He is with the Brennan Center for Justice, and Chris is good enough to join us. Thank you, sir. I appreciate your time. Let me ask you this. If the entire Russia story does not happen, it appears from the story around the Times and a couple other stories that many of the systems, if not most of the systems put in place by a lot of states, are 10, 15, 20 years old at least. Did the system need to be upgraded even without the Russia story?
Sure. I mean, there's two, the reliability issues of using aging equipment and security issues can be sometimes can be viewed as two sides of the same coin. One of the things about older machines is that they can run, older, outdated software like Windows XP or Windows 2000. And using that sort of outdated software, it comes with some inherent security vulnerabilities because, Microsoft stopped supporting those systems a year or more ago. So, they're not getting the regular security updates that they used to. So that's one thing about using older equipment that's oftentimes engineered to work with that sort of older software. Another part of it is that, older equipment, just by virtue of its age and being used longer, can break down during elections and cause, things that we see at polls, irregularities like long lines. So the machines that are older tend to be, have some security vulnerabilities. This is particularly true for the machines that don't have paper, or touchscreen DRE machines or direct recording electronic machines. But also at the same time, those older machines, it's more likely they'll break down on election day just because of they've been used for so much longer.
Is this all driven on a state by state basis, or is the federal government playing some of a role?
Well, I mean, it's a good question. In general, elections are run at the local level. In some states, every election jurisdiction, that'll be a county or city that administers its own elections, they can sometimes use the same voting system or voting equipment across the state. I mean, other states still use, you know, one of several different kinds of voting equipment. So it really depends on the state. Some states, you know, are providing funding for new machines, and that's great. When states don't provide funding for new machines, then the responsibility can fall down to the, you know, the local level. So then it becomes a local issue of finding the funding at that level.
Chris, do we have a fairly large disparity from state to state on how prepared they are right now before they make changes to prevent this hacking, or are most states fairly close in what they have?
Well, it's really, you know, it's a good question. It's really, you know, as I said, it's going to be different from state to state. And it's also important not to overstate the risk. But at the same time, one of the first things we probably want to do is start to replace these older, outdated machines that don't actually have a paper record that you can use to confirm the actual electronic total. These machines are used statewide in five states. That's Louisiana, New Jersey, South Carolina, Georgia, and Delaware. And, you know, I think that a lot of folks think that those kinds of machines tend to be the most insecure. At the same time, you know, I said it's, you know, we don't want to overstate the risk, but, you know, there is a risk of undermining the public's confidence in the election and in our elections, and that's a real risk. So having some, you know, more secure systems in place where electronic vote totals can be confirmed with paper records can help to bolster the public's confidence that, you know, the elections counts are accurate and their votes are being counted.
Okay, let me stay with that on making sure we're not overstating the risk, because you know, another report came out, I think it was about 2-3 months ago, where it showed that Russia did try, literally in some cities, to try to alter votes. Not just everything with Facebook, not separate from whatever took place, if anything took place at all in reaching out to the administration, but in literally trying to alter outcomes, and that the systems as they are now fought it off. So how secure, if changes were not made, how confident should people feel about the next hacking, which could come from Russia, China, North Korea, you name it?
Yeah, that's a great point. And, you know, I think it's about making sure that our voting systems are resilient so that if they're, you know, that one, they are detecting these sort of breaches or attacks as they come along. We saw this happen in some states. You know, I know that I read that in Minnesota, there was a scan of the voter registration database by, an IP address that had already been marked as being suspect by the Secretary of State's office.
Right.
And that was detected. And, you know, that prevented a breach. So I think that having these sort of automated processes in place that can detect something before it happens are going to be really important. And then also, you know, assuming that these things may happen, having the necessary backups and contingency plans in place so that, you know, if, you know, God forbid something did happen, that, you know, voters know that there's a way that, you know, any sort of changes can be mitigated by the sort of contingency plans and protections in place.
So let me ask you this. For the Trump voters right now who are listening, and they're saying, I'm so sick of this story. It's more fake news. Why are we talking about this? For even those supporters, why should they care about this story?
Well, I mean, I think that, you know, the security of our elections and the public's confidence in them is critical for people to have faith in our democracy. You know, at the same time, I think that there's, you know, there's talk of the security vulnerabilities and potential for hacking. There's also, you know, talk of widespread fraud that has been made, you know, with very little evidence. So I think that these sort of two factors together, you know, have to really run the risk of undermining the public's confidence that our elections are being run properly and that the vote counts and the people's votes are being, you know, recorded accurately. So I think it's important that systems are in place to just support the public's confidence.
So I'm looking here at the Time story, and it says this, Homeland Security, their Department of Critical Infrastructure designation will meet with department officials in Atlanta this month to discuss how they can share information about threats. We hear this so many times, Chris, when something tragic takes place, and sometimes it's the FBI, it's the CIA, it's other apparatus within the government, how they weren't coordinating, they weren't talking to themselves. Do we have any idea right now how often states are talking amongst themselves and trying to work together in total to see what's working for them, what's vulnerable, so that all states can be as up to speed as possible?
Well, I mean, I know that, and you may be referring to this, the partnership between the Department of Homeland Security, the Election Assistance Commission, which is a federal agency that sort of shares best practices in running elections, and the National Association of Secretaries of State, you know, are getting together to discuss the sort of cybersecurity threats to our elections. So I think there is, you know, to that effect, there is this sort of information sharing going on. At the same time, you know, not every jurisdiction is going to necessarily have the same resources. You know, larger jurisdictions like Los Angeles, you know, Chicago or other places are going to have a lot of, you know, resources to invest in elections that a smaller, you know, rural jurisdiction just won't. So I think that, you know, I'm making sure that the sort of IT expertise is being provided to smaller jurisdictions, which sometimes are going to have, you know, less funding to invest in that sort of, you know, expertise is going to be really important for making sure that, you know, all counties are getting, you know, all jurisdictions, regardless of the sort of financial resources available to them, are getting, you know, protections in place.
Let's stay with that. To get the entire country where it needs to be to prevent what is realistically anticipated at this point about hacking, how much total money are we talking about that needs to be spent to get the systems where they should be?
Well, I mean, I think that to replace some of the machines that I'm talking about, the direct recording electronic machines that don't have a paper record, we've estimated that that would cost probably somewhere between $1 and $400 million. As far as a larger scale investment, you know, we're talking billions of dollars. In 2002 and 2003, when a lot of states started to replace their voting equipment after the meltdown in Florida, the federal government provided about $3 billion in funding for elections at the local level, which was, you know, often was dispersed to states and then, you know, provided to election officials to replace their voting equipment.
How much money was that?
I believe it was about $3 billion.
Okay.
But that said, you know, not everyone's starting from scratch replacing their equipment the same way as then. So it'd be different. But you know, there is some hope at the federal level for providing more funding. Maybe not the billions of dollars that I mentioned, but you know, there is some bipartisan support for these types of measures to invest in our elections infrastructure. Recently, Senator Lindsey Graham and Klobuchar co-sponsored an amendment that would provide some funding for security updates to our voting systems, and you know, there's a companion bill in the House called the Paper Act, which would do something similar too, also co-sponsored by Republican and Democrat.
Do we have any idea how many areas might be able to get done what they want to get done before next year's midterm elections?
It's hard to say, but you know, there is time before the next election to implement, you know, more protections, and you know, there obviously, you know, there's a lot of attention to the issue, so it's a good time to try to focus the public's attention on the issue, and you know, move lawmakers and agents, you know, administrators to sort of address these issues, you know, in advance of the 2018 elections, because there is still, you know, enough time to make changes to improve election security.
Chris, thanks for your time. I appreciate it. We'll reach out again.
Thank you.
Chris Famagetti, he is with the Brennan Center for Justice Policy and Research Analysts, about what is going on going forward to try to get what we have from city to city and state to state regarding elections to try to prevent it from hacking that may have been attempted already and might take place going forward. Pick up a little bit on what Chris had to say when we come back. A reminder, it is a 51 past 1. That is your Lindus Construction Time Check. Time to call us right now for a free home hail damage inspections when you need it. This is a text which I'm sure reflects many people who voted for the winner of the last election, Donald Trump. Voter fraud has been going on forever. Most notorious was Chicago in the 60s. The integrity only matters when a liberal loses. Hey, there's no doubt Chicago and just utter incompetence and corruption and elections, in the 60s has been going on forever, including with Jack Kennedy. And maybe the key to Jack Kennedy winning the race over Richard Nixon. But here's the reality. In this case, without a doubt, Russia went to extraordinary lengths to a level they have never ventured to before to influence this race. There's no doubt about it. And as Chris just pointed out, how many different bills have been proposed to stop this by Republicans and Democrats? How many different committees are investigating this by Republicans and Democrats? Robert Mueller, appointed as the special prosecutor. Remember his vote total to approve him to continue as the head of the FBI? Oh, that was 100-0. Because this time, by a country, it was to favor a Republican. How do we know the next time it won't be to favor a Democrat? There is a part of liberals who will not get over the loss. They have to move on. But everybody should be concerned about what was attempted and what could affect our country going forward.